boys from South Pacific Muscle, joined by Rocco. Might have a couple of other boys joining us today, but just really, it's been a while, so we thought we'd better shoot the shit. So Mike, firstly...
Our fans are missing us, man. Our fans want content. Even if it is rubbish content.
I'm your fan. Fanboy Nate.
Appreciation Society.
Yeah, Appreciation Society. How are you anyway, Mike?
Oh, me? Yeah, I'm good. Yeah, you know, I always speak just about every day, man. I'm all good. Yeah, I've got some had some good numbers on my measurements and stuff. So yeah, I'm pretty pleased that things are tracking right. But like I said today, never enough. You know, things are tracking nicely, but man, never enough until you're, you know, Paris or Ryzilla or something. You know, like just never big enough. So yeah, put on some good tissue since last year, and looking forward to cutting up and showing it off. But I look back through some of my comp photos from the last couple of years, and oh my god, I'm so small. You know, muscle.
Hey, what I've got to say is you're looking like a box of fluffies, bro. So what I want people to notice is have a good look at Mike tonight and how buoyant and fluffy everything is. And in another 12 weeks, let's have a look at him and see how shabby he is. You won't notice it, though, because I'll be shabby too. So the whole standard will just drop and we'll blend in undercover right in front of everyone's eyes.
Oh, we'll just stop podcasting. Hey, tell you, we'll record a whole lot and just spin them out over the next few weeks when we're dieting.
Yeah, should we do that, eh? And then, like, next week, like, when we come on, I'll kind of go. And then next week, suck your face in a bit more.
Yeah.
and then we'll just pump them out with fucking bullshit timestamps on them. Anyway, that's us. And joined by Rocco. Rocco, how's things down in Gore?
Oh, bloody good, eh? You know, good old South and things.
Having balmy weather down there?
Oh, it's been pretty shitty today. Yeah. There was a wee bit of sun, but not too much.
Hey, man, I've got to break it to you, you know, just to burst your bubble of what paradise in Hawke's Bay looks like. We had our first lot of snow on the ranges the other day, and the temperature dropped by like 10 degrees. And I went to the beach today, and I was determined. The sun had come out, and I'm getting my shirt off. I sat on the beach with a coffee. I lasted about 5 minutes. I went, fuck, this is cold. Put a hoodie on, and then went home. So I think the whole country is getting like that. But, you know, is that... season sort of comes around and temperatures drop, to me it only says one thing. It says competition season's on for us. So
cover up, shred up,
reveal. But I've got to say, Hawke's Bay to me seemed like a nicer place to prep than Gore or Dunedin, only for the fact that I remember in Dunedin when I was prepping, biking to the gym with two pairs of socks on, and it started snowing, and I went, fuck this, I am truly cold. And it's the only time in my life I remember being truly cold. And, like, you know, I've slept in snow caves, I go snowboarding a lot, but that was the only day when your body fat is so low and you've got that wind that just cuts through your jacket, you're on a pushy.
You should have come and you should have come flatter with me, because I had that flat right next to the power dome. So I would go out and down the stairs and into the power dome, and then the change rooms and toilets had a back door. You'd open that and it'd be on the, to the stairway to my place. So once I'd gone through once, I'd come and go to the gym without ever having to go outside. So
no snowshoes required.
No snowshoes required.
Sure.
Yeah, Rocco, I was going to say, how's your frosting going down in Gore, man? How's the new do?
The new do?
Pretty widely accepted in Gore. You got some frosting there. You're a bit of a different...
No, it's same colour.
Is it?
Yeah, it just goes a bit blonde sometimes.
I think it's something to do. Something to do with his acting career that's going on. Has anyone seen it? Have you heard about this, Mike? We've got bit of an aspiring actor here. So what have you been doing? I saw you sent me I think it was a run sheet or something for the production you're in, or the poster. Do you want to tell us about it, man?
Oh, yeah, we finished up on Friday. Past term, been working on Grease. I played Danny Zuko. It was quite a good time.
Yeah.
I got those moves.
Oh, was it the musical? So you were singing as well?
Yeah, I had to sing. I was a wee bit out of my comfort zone, but still good.
Yeah, it's good, man. It's really cool. Hey, we're going to get some video of this. We've got to get it. Someone's got it on video, man, on their phone or a school production video.
I have to send you some of the clips.
Yeah, man. That'll be gold. That'll be gold. We'll be able to make some good memes out of those.
Yeah, fuck. Don't judge my singing, bro. It's pretty fucking shocking.
Bro, look, if you can get up and sing in front of anyone, kudos to you, man, because it's actually one of my goals post-bodybuilding is to learn how to sing properly. And I want to get a singing coach, I suppose. I don't even know what you get. Do you get a singing coach?
Yeah, you do. Yeah, you do.
Yeah, yeah. I just, not because I want to sing anywhere. I just, you know, like a lot of my friends are musicians and some of them are really, really good singers. And I'm just kind of like, I kind of like to do that. And I do sing a lot when I'm in the car and I belt out tunes and that. And I'm pretty fucking average, I've got to say. But I just like to do it. So, yeah, but I don't think I don't know, man. Much rather stand in my undies in front of people and hit a lat spread, show a front double, than try and belt out a Grease tune, bro.
Oh, but I got those chills. It's electrifying.
How's the work with Denver going? You're putting on some size?
Oh, I've been stepping back a wee bit from bodybuilding recently. I got into rugby, sport, and school, and the production, obviously. I'm just really kicking back into it now.
I think it's probably a good idea to make the most of your last sort of few months at school. Yeah. I mean, year 13 is pretty good social year. There's lots going on. So, you know, bodybuilding is always going to be there and you're still very young. So, you might as well enjoy a bit of life as well.
Yeah. Well, I'm getting back into it a wee bit now. By the end of the year, hopefully I'll be up in Auckland and I'll kick into some serious shit with him.
Hey, that's a good point though, Mike, I've got to say, because I have to do that with my young fella. You know, his whole life revolves around jiu-jitsu, and you know, trains jiu-jitsu 3 to 4 times a week, comes to the gym 3 times a week with me and does his running and other stuff outside of that. And I sort of said to him, oh, are you going to go to the school ball this year? And he goes, oh no, it depends of what day I'm training. And I went no, that's me. I get to do that because I'm 40 years old. You get to go to a school ball and take a girl to school ball and do all those things. And he's like, oh yeah. And I said, look, fully understand if there's a comp the next night, you're not going to the ball. Absolutely understand that. But even if there's a comp that day, you can go to the school ball. You'll probably be scuffed up and have a fucking your cauliflower ear in good form. And you know, but you got to do those things because you only get a chance to do those things once. And, you know, a lot of adults that don't go to the school ball sort of go, oh, man, I really wish I went to a ball, because you don't really get that many opportunities as an adult to go to those things anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, I felt that way back in year 11 too. I was too focused on my training, but I'm happy I went.
So that, I guess, begs the wider question that, you know, like a lot of the top athletes have appeared to be, you know, really obsessive from a very young age and sort of made lots of sacrifices. And I guess you wonder whether you need to do that, or most athletes need to be like that to reach the very top. And if you do go, oh, well, I'm just going to, you know, I'm going to go train, but I'm also going to do this, and I want to go out with my mates. And are you sort of, I guess, restricting your capacity or ability to kind of go all the way? Do you need to be totally obsessive? Because to be honest, 90%+ of people who are obsessive like that don't make it. So have essentially wasted all that time and not had those experiences they could have had. But do you need to be like that to give yourself a chance of making it all the way to the top? Unless you're a Kevin Lavroni or a
Chris Cormier, you know. So I reckon I think the conversation, if we're thinking about the elite level guys, what we've got to remember is they're not normal. They are not 99% of the bodybuilding population. So what they do or what they did to achieve what they did doesn't really apply physiologically to anyone else, because it's like, you know, if you see someone who's got massive delts, like I'd look at Paris and go, look at his delts. Paris, what do you do to train delts? And I go and do what Paris does for delts, does absolutely nothing for me. And, you know, likewise, you know, with different body parts or different dieting approaches, etc. I think those guys are real outliers.
Most of those guys are also hugely obsessive to reach, you know, pro level, to reach Olympia level. Even the ones with a good genetics still had to be totally obsessive. And there's only the very, you know, sort of one percenters of the one percenters that can be the Chris Cormiers who can kind of be a bit lackadaisical about it. So, you know, there's those guys who are totally obsessive to get to the top, but there's a whole lot of people who are pretty obsessive and have made a lot of sacrifices that didn't sort of make anything of it. So you don't want to sell yourself short and go, well, yeah, I guess, you know, I guess me too.
Yeah, me and Mike. But I do agree with you 100%. But I also think that what you got to remember, you look at Ronnie, you look at Dorian, Phil Heath, and look at when they started training and when they became that obsessive about their training. You know, when we're talking about 16 to 18 year old, 19 year old guys, those guys weren't even really into the swing of their training obsessively at those younger ages because they came into the sport slightly later. And, you know, like Phil Heath coming across from basketball, etc. Dorian after his little stint in juvie, you know, so that they were relatively late bloomers compared to when we're talking about kids in year 10, 11, 12 that are into their bodybuilding and won't go out to anything with their friends because I've got to stay home and eat and lie on the couch because someone said on a podcast that don't do anything else, you could save your energy for bodybuilding. So, you know, I think there's a little bit of scope there in those early years to work out if it's for you. And if you start becoming obsessive and you love it, then maybe it's the thing for you, or you've developed.
Then maybe that's an opportunity for us to share our years of experience there, man. And that, you know, I don't have delusions of adequacy. I don't think I'm getting a pro card ever. I don't even think, you know, I can be competitive in an open bodybuilding competition. I do it because I enjoy the day to day. I enjoy having a goal to work towards. I enjoy it for what it is, and I do like competing. And if you love to train, you love to compete, and the outcome is a byproduct of that, then you don't mind the sacrifice. So I guess you kind of, I guess, got to get it the right way around. If you're looking for the outcome and what's the shortest way to get there, the easiest way to get there, then I don't think you're going to have a lot of success. So
I got a great story. Actually, I sat down with a guy yesterday, very good natural bodybuilder, like sort of starting to be, you know, at that level where you look at him and go, fuck, is he on gear? He looks like he's on gear. You know, like he's very meticulous. And sort of having a yarn to him, and he was talking about how he cooks his chicken on the charcoal grill. And he's like, oh, you should taste it, man. The chicken's just really moist, and the outside's kind of crispy, and it's got the smoke flavor. And I went, you know what? You've just identified what it is about bodybuilding that I kind of like, is that we sort of deprive ourselves, and the smallest things like that are like going out and having a big feed at a fancy fucking restaurant and all those things, because it's that little glimpse of sunshine in your day. And like, I had the opposite today. I was taking the kids back and I went, oh, I'll run them through McDonald's because Dave's has been training his ass off and, you know, have a blowout. And I went through and I said, can I get a large Coke, frozen Coke, no sugar? And they said, I'm sorry, we don't do the no sugar frozen Cokes. And I was like, you fucking bastards. But, you know, those little things like that become actually quite significant rewards and significant sort of highlights. And I kind of think it's, you know, you're almost sort of tricking yourself that you've got all these cool things going on when you're actually living like a starving peasant in a developing nation. Unfortunately, that's what our diet looks like. No, it's not. It's a lot more balanced, and we're very blessed to be able to have what we have, but we do limit ourselves. And to the average person, it's horrifically bland and horrifically boring, but you know, hey, them's the breaks.
We do it because we love it, right?
Yeah.
Well, it is.
And Rocco, you got a bit sidetracked and you did a duathlon.
Oh yeah. PE. Oh, well, I didn't really train for it.
Yeah.
We're supposed to be, but I was like, no, I can't do the extra cardio.
You would have written the evaluation of the training program. How did you go with that?
Well, we're in the process of that now. I've just started that up.
Some creative writing.
Yeah, it's pretty easy actually, because it's just like, have you ever done a training program before? It's like, well, fuck you, obviously.
Did you write that? I can't wait to see your teacher mark. How do you mark? Have you done a training program previously? Fucking hey, have a look at me. does that get like an excellence or?
I've just finished.
I reckon it should.
I've just finished marking some of those.
Put a photo next to it. Sorry, Mike.
Whole swathes of it I was just skipping past. And that's like, have you done a training program? Who cares, right? Get to the evaluation, because you're evaluating the effectiveness of your training program. So have you done one before? That doesn't even factor into my marking. You know, I'm going, what were your methods and principles of training? How did you apply them? You know, were they effective? How do you know? How could you apply them better? That sort of thing. So are you doing well on your...
Question for you, Mike. As a PE teacher and Rocco as a PE student, How much is there in, you know, year 12, year 13 PE that someone that was interested in bodybuilding could take and apply to bodybuilding as we know it on the hands on the ground?
If you're in my class, probably quite a bit.
Yeah, I wish I was in your class.
But what's the curriculum like? Is there stuff like is there a good base nutrition program across? Is there a good principles of training in terms of resistance training, etc., that the guys can take a lot out of?
The standard that Rocco's doing at the moment that I've just finished marking, it's evaluate the effectiveness of a performance improvement program. Mm-hmm. And he would presumably be relating that to his duathlon training. Whereas I've got quite a small class, so I allowed them to train for their own individual sports. So they could do something they're interested in, so I had a basketball player and a couple of netball players and a triathlete. So
would does this be the same thing that my boy's doing about 800 metres?
What's in year 12 or 13?
12.
Possibly.
Yeah, he's just been running 1,200 metres, and he said to me that he's got a kid in his class who his father was a pro cyclist on the European tour. He's a good friend of mine, and his son is like a national 800 metre runner and like got some cracking times, man. And so the teacher goes, oh, we're going to be doing the 800 metres. I'm not going to teach you about the training plan. I'm going to hand it over to this kid here. So one of the kids in the class, who, because he's been working with elite level coaches, is essentially doing a lot of the stuff for the teacher with the teacher facilitating it, which makes absolute sense because, you know, if you had some teenage maths prodigy in your class as a maths teacher, you take every opportunity to let them, you know, contribute and teach other kids what they know, as long as it was meeting the curriculum. Yeah,
I think that's something that people our age who are not in education kind of don't realize. Because when I went to school, the teacher stood up there and go, I am the central repository of all knowledge. If you work hard and you learn, you could know as much as me. You could be as good as me one day. And It's just not like that anyway. It's like I'm a facilitator, you know. I sort of try and there's so much information out there. I'm helping kids assimilate, process, critically evaluate that information because I don't know everything that's on the internet, right? They can just jump on and Google something, right? But how do they know whether it's bullshit? How does it apply? That sort of thing. So
imagine having a kid in your class that went online and went, fuck, I'm going to do the Lane Norton fucking competition prep. And then he came and had a conversation with you. You know, some of the stuff they would learn from an online course from someone who really is a guru would have you going, yep, I'll get back to you on that one. You know what I mean? Because the thing, like in our day, we didn't have the internet. We had the books, and the only books we got were the books from school. You know, whereas now, if you're interested in something, you know, if you're looking at duathlons, how to speed up your run or how to, you know, improve your swimming technique, fuck, hit Google and YouTube and have a search. And as long as you're going to work out what's good information and what's dribble, you know, there's a lot out there.
I think it's probably like any sort of competitor. You know, you decide you want to do a show, you jump on and use Lane Norton's, you know, carbon coach, whatever it is. Yeah, that would probably be effective, but you still don't know what you're doing. You're still just doing as you're told. You don't kind of know why you're doing it or how it all fits together. You'll learn a lot about yourself through it. You'll learn a lot by using that, but you need a kind of a base understanding to
about,
kind of like.
What about if someone got into something like John Jewett's J3 University, where he teaches all the principles? Because let's face it, you know, if there's a 16-year-old kid who's been in the gym for 2 or 3 years already, reads everything, follows every podcast, if he got on something like that,
yep,
you would be 10 years ahead of anyone else in bodybuilding your age from in terms of the knowledge base that you could learn within a matter of weeks. Although you'd have to apply it practically, of course.
So I had a para athlete. He's a para javelin thrower. He's got New Zealand para javelin records. Yep. And he's coached by Raylene Bates, who's one of the top coaches in the world, really. But, you know, she's local. And so he had a training program for her, and I said, oh, no, I'm not even going to look at your training program, right? You know, I don't even know what you're doing, why you're doing it, but I need you to evaluate it. Now, his progress, like diminishing returns, he's not making a lot of progress over the 6 weeks or 8 weeks because he's on the back end of a, you know, a training cycle, nearing nationals, so he's peaking. So he just had to kind of evaluate why he was doing what he was doing, how it added to sort of his performance. There was a lot of talk about sort of deloading, and with COVID sort of things getting moved around here to kind of manipulate things. It's just, why'd you do what you did? How did it help? What could you do differently?
I really enjoy that stuff, man. It's like, you know, you go back to powerlifting days and they had multi-year plans. So you had a multi-year plan, perhaps going over the next 3 years of essentially what your training was going to look like. And it was adjusted, obviously, like when you're in a business and you do a five-year plan, which I personally think is a fucking waste of time because, you know, things change so quickly. So I just think the time period maybe isn't right. But essentially, even with a five-year plan, you know, you're flexing in that plan and reacting to external and internal things as well. So, you know, like having a plan like that when you're a para athlete, you're right. You know, you're going to get, it's like us in the off season. Do we look any better in the off season than we did 8 weeks ago before we started? No, we look worse, you know, but we might be big and, you know, we can see that size, but we look sloppy as shit, but that's what we needed to do at that point in time. But
when he was evaluating the effectiveness of that program, he went away to nationals and he went to South Island, had a good throw. Went away to nationals, had a bad meet. I said, it's not all about, did you break your personal best? Did you throw well? It's, your whole program is setting yourself up to have the capacity to throw well. And there's a whole lot of variables that go into it on the day. So just because you don't happen to break your PB doesn't mean your program wasn't effective. You gave yourself the ability to throw well by putting all the things in place to get yourself ready. So I guess it's like, you know, maybe prepping for a comp, getting yourself lean, getting yourself shredded, getting yourself ready to go. And just fucking
screw up peak week.
You know, yeah. Didn't look your best, but you were right there ready to get all the tools ready to go, and you just didn't quite get the last bit right.
Peak week is a fucking nightmare, man, for most people, because I think, you know, at a higher level going into that peak week, you have spent the last 15 to 25 weeks, whatever your kind of period was, trying to do everything possible to achieve a result. And then you get to that last week and go, right, in this last week, what are all the things I can do that could make me better? And often those things have got a, you know, you might get it right and get a cent or two, but if you get it wrong, you know, it's all over. And I think sometimes, like, we have to almost check our personalities and go, right, I'm coming into peak week. Now it's not about doing everything possible. It's just about doing the right things. So,
yeah, it's like blessing today. Did you see what he did yesterday?
Yeah, hey man, look, let's
3,000 calorie carb up, was it?
Yeah.
Let's talk New York Pro then, because that's what we actually came here to do, but we got sidetracked by coaching stuff and nerdy stuff, and then and your electrifying performance on stage. So New York Pro, firstly, I've got to say, how cool is it having 2 weeks in a row with a high quality bodybuilding show after so much time without the show?
Yeah, 5 months.
Mean. Yeah, man, it was good. And, you know, last week was really good. I really enjoyed it. Justin was very, very dominant, I thought. So obviously he sort of went into New York kind of as a favorite, but then there was Nick Walker, who was on everyone's mind, and people were talking his son. But then obviously late in the week, he posted a video and he didn't look like he was quite on.
Off though with Ramadan, right?
Hey, look,
a month we can't drink any water through the daylight hours, can't eat any food. I mean, he had to flip his whole time schedule around. So he's trying to sleep during the day. And I listened to that podcast with Fuad. He said he could only really sleep 2, 3, 4 hours. And then he was getting up at 2 in the afternoon and having to wait 4 hours before he did his cardio.
I think what people don't realize either, there's summer over there. And so the days.
It got dark. So, I mean,
Sorry. I think we lost it a bit there, Mike. But what he was saying was that they're in summer, so there was very limited nighttime hours, and so he had to compress that whole day into a very short period, including his training, his cardio, and all his food. So, yeah, very testing conditions. Makes you wonder why he chose that show with that timing. Anyway, he did. And then obviously we still had the sort of thing going on between Nick and Blessing, etc. So Let's get down to it. For those that don't know the results, in fifth place, we had last week's third place, I think, Muhammad Alaman, Dorian Haywood jumping up the order and getting fourth this week. I think he looked really good. We can talk about Dorian.
Who was it that had the problem with the rear lat spread?
That was Justin.
Yeah.
That was quite bad, eh?
Was it cramping?
Yeah, it looks like cramp.
Is it cramping?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, that's all right.
Yeah. So Dorian Haywood, Dorian came in very, you know, he's big and he's hard. And I think he was a little bit better than last week. So I think deserving fourth place here. Any other thoughts on Dorian Haywood?
Just big and hard, eh? Mm-hmm.
Talking about that, just jumping back a bit, Morgan Asti. Oh, wow. Condition for the last two shows, he's been the most conditioned athlete on stage, in my opinion. He's got freakish amounts of muscle. He's just so big. What's his, do you know his height, Mike? Lost you there, Mike.
6'5", I believe.
Yeah, it's a big frame to fill out, eh? It's like Jamie.
320 on stage.
Yeah, it's fucking huge.
But it's not even a number I can kind of get my head around in terms like off season. Yeah, I could kind of have that number in my head for, you know, an athlete. But when you're talking about on stage, it's like we're talking Greg Kovacs kind of material again, aren't we?
He was. I didn't see a lot of sort of straight comparisons or sort of pictures of him doing his compulsories, but he looked like he didn't have a lot of separation. He was very, very lean, very dry and hard. Didn't look like he had a lot of separation.
They talked
about portions not being great, but I kind of couldn't see that without seeing the compulsories.
I think that the separation thing, I heard a bit of commentary today on that and the question of whether when you sort of really max out the amount of muscle you can hold on your frame, do you eat into that amount of separation you get? And, you know, obviously people are pointing at like Big Ramy with his legs, you know, they aren't as separated as some of the other guys, but they're just freaking huge. So is there a trade-off there, or is that per person, or is it a generalized sort of thing that applies?
Don't ask me, mate. I haven't got separation or size, so I can't tell you.
Yeah.
You might need to ask someone that's over 300 pounds, though.
But even then, you know, they really can only talk about themselves. I don't know. I mean, I know that, was it Jay Cutler that spent a lot of time getting really, really heavy deep tissue massage and scraping through the, you know, to try and get that separation out? That's pretty extreme kind of stuff, you know?
Wouldn't you do it? I mean,
100%.
You sign me up. That money.
Stay there, any performance edge, right?
Once my legs achieve a size and I need to start worrying about separation being the issue, then I'll think about that. At the moment, there's probably a hell of a lot of separation because there's just not enough muscle on there, but it is what it is.
I deep tissue massage through my legs. And man, there's some nasty shit in there, are you, that you just don't even know you're picking up. Yeah. It was sort of my good leg rather than my one that I've had hip problems with. And there was just like gaps, holes, you know, lumps in there, that like big knots of scar tissue, I didn't even know were there. It's got to stop your growth and stop your sort of contractile properties as well as sort of tying it all up, binding it all up. So, look, if I could find someone, you know, good enough here, the one guy I used is sort of, he just does it sort of part-time now and then. He's got a full-time job, so I kind of hate imposing on him, but it's hard for me to use somebody else who's inferior when I've had someone really good.
Hey, might pay if people out there, wherever you are in the country, Just put in the comments if you know someone that does really good deep tissue massage and where they are, then other athletes in that area can access that person. Because like you, Mike, to find someone like that, I mean, how do you find someone like that? It's bloody hard at the moment.
Well, speaking of Sean King, and he put me onto a woman, but I initially booked and then went, oh, it's nearly Delaney's birthday or Mother's Day or something like that, so I'll send her along. And she's she's got almost as much muscle as me, but not quite. So just to kind of test it out, and she came back and go, oh, yeah, she was pretty good, which means that you take a step up to kind of, and like Sean rated her, so, and he's got more muscle than I have. But Delaine's also been massaged by the same person that I have, and sort of to go to someone else, she definitely
thought... That wasn't the guy that did my biceps that time down in Dunedin, and he was a rock climber or something. And
Jack, with the glasses,
I swear, bro, that is the only massage I've ever had that I've tapped out in. I actually went, hey, man, I need a break for a minute. I'm about to cry. He was horrific. Felt like it was really good. It was really good. I remember it freeing up my bicep a lot.
Because I guess if you give it a bit of a rub and it feels better and it feels a bit looser, that's fine, okay? But if you want it fixed, sometimes it needs to be deeper and harder than that, and sometimes it's causing damage to kind of realign the tissues or break up the scar tissue. So I'll take more pain and suffering to fix it rather than just sort of giving it a quick rub to make it feel better.
No, very cool. Right, so back to New York Pro. Yeah, Hussein Mustafa came in third. I think he was deserving third, as we've mentioned. He'd been under, you know, pretty trying conditions, to say the least. But interesting to see that even at that top level, people work around life, you know. Some of us have got day jobs that keep us, tied to an office, and you can't cook and do all these things like a pro bodybuilder, but we work around it. Other people work physical jobs, and I don't know how they do it, and kudos to them, but they manage and get the calories in and get the fluids in so they're not dehydrated, train before work or whatever they do, and people work around these things. So interesting, though, I've never really, I guess we've had guys that are like firefighters and things like that in the Olympia, that have got other jobs, or Cedric McMillan in the military. But for the most part, you know, now athletes are professional athletes, they have a bit more leeway. So how much of an impact do you think, you know, that would have been on Hassan? Anyone?
It would have had a huge impact, I reckon. But I don't know how they fit all that stuff in. If it was me, I would have picked a later show with that Ramadan, but... Like the California Pro, I think that's a wee bit later.
Yeah. That's what Sergio's doing, isn't he?
Yeah.
And Akeem, I think.
Targo, isn't he?
Yeah. Right, so moving up, last week's winner, Justin Rodriguez. Wow, sheer width on that man is just unbelievable. I thought he looked as good, maybe a fraction off compared to last week, but he still looked like, you know, when he walked out, you think it was his show?
I saw the comparison with him and Nick pose for pose on Desktop Bodybuilding. And, you kind of look at him and go, yeah, he's pretty impressive. His waist was relatively narrow, wide lats. But, yeah, Nick kind of beat him on every shot, including the legs. Nick's legs were so much bigger than, you know, like Justin on his own looked amazing. Mm. You put someone more amazing next to him and kind of makes him look lesser.
From the waist down, man, I don't know, man, this might be going out on a bit of a limb, but in that side pose from the waist down, who compares to him other than Rami? Who
are you talking, Nick?
Yeah.
He
sits into that side chest and he's got that hammy drop and his quad, Hollingshead? I don't know the answer to that, man. I just think
maybe.
All I'm thinking is Nick Walker is, you know, he's pretty special when he's in those side shots, because you're just looking. But even when he did his front ab and thigh, you know, usually you're looking at the abs and the top half of the body. But in that one, I was just keep getting drawn to his legs because, I mean, his legs were huge, but there was really good separation. Matt Jansen and him nailed it, whatever they did. Yeah.
Nick was the standout.
Yeah. That, I've got to say, you know, he was a clear winner, dominant winner. And I think when you look at the Nick Walker we saw last year in his pro debut to today, I think there wasn't a lot of weight in it in terms of, I think someone said 6 pounds or something like that, but the quality was just phenomenal. And he's posing so well now, you know, his
holding the mid section on.
Yeah, keeping his waist in. Yeah. And he shortens his waist in some of the poses now, contracting his abs rather than, he used to look quite extended. like, and he looked quite long through there. So anyway, should we have a look at some photos and check out some comparisons?
Yeah, that's a good idea.
I think so.
Right. And we're going to talk Blessing versus Nick, because it was a non-event, but sort of as
No, look, man, Blessing gets enough airtime. He's making enough money. He doesn't need my 20 viewers to support him. No, look, you know,
we discussed, you know, it seemed fairly premeditated. I don't think he really thought he had a shot at winning, but certainly created a lot of hype, sort of a lot of followers.
It was for the money, I reckon.
He looks fantastic by himself. He did really well, I thought, for a debut. But the standard was just so high that realistically he wasn't in that conversation. But as you say, Mike, what a PR guy. You know, he really played the game behind the game. He is taking a page out of Conor McGregor's playbook. And why not? Conor McGregor's now the highest paid athlete in the world as of last year. So, you know, it probably works. And, hey, look, we're getting into pay-per-view and we're kind of moving down that track of UFC. So, you know, there might be some more opportunities for guys like that that are creating their name. And realistically, does the comp result really matter? Probably not. I mean, it would...
Who shall I call out for this year then? Who shall I call out?
Yeah.
Anyone got a chance of winning either. So if I call someone out, maybe it'll get me a bit of hype.
Aim high, man. Just like...
Right,
just
Paris, I'm coming for you.
Yeah, we'll do it. We'll do it. There's going to be a... and I'll do the... Where's your sweep?
Where's your everything?
Right. Where's your everything? Right. So we won't spend too much time on this because people that are just listening, doing their cardio, won't know what we're talking about. But... comparison there, Nick Walker, Justin Rodriguez, and Hassan Mustafa. Hassan looking a little bit off there in my eyes. On the front double, I mean, Nick's a clear winner in that shot. And it's a...
If you look at the way the side definition in the abs goes, Nick's tapers down nicely. Hassan sort of goes straight down towards his trunks. So that's a good sign for Nick. I mean, it's a nice tight waist that's sort of tapering down as he goes.
Yeah, absolutely right there when you look at the finer detail, eh? God, look at those legs.
It's all those little parts that make up the winner.
Man, his legs look really... His little legs
look... really, really big parts, like his arms and his legs and things.
Oh, yeah. I'm trying to find a few more of the comparison photos. I actually like... I just want to have a look at this because, like, he's changed the way that he poses his... front lat spread, and some people think he should probably that looks a little bit like he's not quite in the shot, but some people think he should retract a bit more, get his elbows out a bit more to show more of the lats. But I kind of think it looks like a Lee Priest type lat spread, and there's just like, if you look at how much fresh air is between his lats and his forearms, there's just a fraction, you know.
It does make his pecs look small though.
Yeah,
that's true, but
yeah. I mean, let's have a see if we can compare it to we haven't got lat spread. It would have been good to have a look at Justin's lat spread if we could find it. But
and what do you think of the color? Because he's like, his color's really good, but there's a big contrast.
Sorry, we lost you there, Mike. Big contrast.
Looks like he's got this white head stuck on top of a brown. What do you think about blending in the tan? Blending in the tan onto the face, or you a fan of that or not?
I've always been a fan of that, even up into the hairline to get it right. But to be honest, you're not fucking judging the colour of your face, so does it really detract you as a judge? I don't know.
Oh, no, not at all.
I don't know. Yeah. I'm not looking at his face that much, so no. I didn't even notice it until just then.
You might as well slap a bit of tan on it and make it look...
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, yeah, I personally I would, but it's probably, you know, personal choice maybe. That's a great Most Muscular by Justin, though, isn't it?
Yeah, look at the separation of his chest.
Yeah, yeah. That was actually a really close pose. I thought Justin would have that one quite easily, but she was pretty tight there between those two. What else we got there? Look at this. Morgan Asti, eh? What do you reckon about that?
Just 6'5".
Yeah, it's just nuts. His skin over his glutes and that's just like paper, man. nothing.
He doesn't look that big because he's not standing next to anyone. He could, if he was 5'7", he'd be a good sized bodybuilder, but not very big. When you realize he's 6'5" and 320 or something, he's.
I'd like to see him in the lineup actually. Always like seeing those big guys like that, even if they're not there, you know, in contention for the win. But when you put them in the lineup, just to give a comparison to what everyone else is looking like.
Anyway. And I guess you also then get the people who are sort of not as knowledgeable go, oh, but that guy, look, he was the biggest guy there. How come he didn't win? He was in good shape.
Well, if we were selecting point guards, maybe, you know. I don't know. It's really hard. Like, imagine, who'd be the shortest? Would it be William Bonnack? The shortest, or Hardy Chupan in the Open, maybe the two shortest guys out there at the moment.
Yeah, probably. Hardy's quite short, eh?
Gone are the Chris Dickerson, Muhammad Makawe, kind of Lila Brada days, eh?
Yeah, they got
Lila Brada came second at the O, and he was 176 pounds. So yeah.
So you put a guy like that, and like with Bonnack and Hardy, you know, like they've got so much muscle on their frames. But then how do you compare that to, you know, like a Jamie Johal and a Morgan Asti and even some of the other guys that are getting up, you know, just a fraction over 6 foot? It's quite a hard comparison because you're almost looking at two different things.
So I guess there's your swings and roundabouts. You know, as a shorter bodybuilder, you put on 5 kilos or 10 kilos, you know, you see it much more. It makes you look a lot thicker. It seems to be easier for shorter bodybuilders to keep their symmetry or gain or get good proportions. Mm-hmm. So it takes a lot longer as a taller bodybuilder to put on the tissue you need to put on. And it also seems to be a lot more difficult to kind of get your proportions right. But if and when you do, you're a scaled up version. You stand next to them and you sort of blow away the shorter athlete. But it just seems to take a lot longer and be a lot more difficult.
If we had any real dominant athletes, and I don't mean, you know, like, you know, they might be a top five Olympia or winning an Arnold's, etc., guys that are 6'1" and above in recent years. Because, I mean, the last person I remember that was kind of in that level was probably Paul Dillette from memory quite some time ago. I can't think of anyone else who was – this is where we need Mike Kingsnorth to chip in with his knowledge of, you know, because I think like guys like Steve Kuklo is about 6 footish, but I think he's somewhere around there. But I don't think there's many bodybuilders that are much taller than that.
How about Sergio? Is about 5'11", is he? He's quite tall, isn't he?
I'm unsure. I know he's
yeah, he would be. He would be.
Not sure.
His dad was pretty tall.
Interesting anyway. Be interesting to see, because I quite liked it when they used to have, you know, someone like that would come on, because it just throws another dimension into it. So, Right. What else is going on in the world, people? Anything exciting? Who's starting dieting soon?
My wife.
Oh, okay. Do tell.
Oh, she started keto a week or so ago, just tidy up a little bit. She finds keto really, really good for energy levels. And she dropped a little bit of body fat this week, even though we kind of calorie matched with her average carbs, her average calories for a carb cycling.
Yep.
So same sort of 2,200 calories or something, but gone to keto and dropped a little bit of body fat in the first sort of week or so. She's quite enjoying that. And she's hoping that'll just, she's got about another 4 weeks or so of building. She's finding her energy levels in the gym pretty good, but ideally we'll kind of, if that's working well, then we'll just sort of start trimming back calories but stay on keto to try and sort of bring her into the show with sort of lack of hunger and lack of and good energy levels, because that's the way she generally feels on keto.
I've never tried putting on size doing a keto type diet.
I was going to give it a crack this off season. I sort of, when it was time for a kind of resensitize my glucose sensitivity or, you know, mini cut, I was going to have a crack at it. And then I sort of started planning it out and went, she's on 2,200 calories, I'm on 4,800.
Yeah.
That's a shitload of fat and protein. And, you know, and when you're trying to get a bit from as much of it from healthy fats as you can, then that's, you know, it can be expensive and it can be, you know, take a lot of organization, like I suppose all diets do. But I'm in a routine with my sort of lots of rice and chicken and that sort of thing.
Carb cycling was the easy option, eh?
Well, yeah, didn't find that, you know, that wasn't great for me. But as we discussed, you know, I probably wasn't quite ambitious enough with the differences in my calorie intake. So, yeah, wouldn't mind giving it a try. I don't know how much growth we'll get out of her, but she's about top end of the weight that we kind of wanted her to get to. So if she can recomp a little bit, when I still, obviously more muscle's better. She's so tall, but we want as much muscle on her as we can. And then, you know, if she happens to lose some along the way, then, you know, then we've got the capacity to do that. But
just going back to our previous conversation, this is going to be a interesting comparison having Delaine on stage, because she's 6.
She tries to claim 6 foot, but she's 5'11 and a half, but yeah, pretty much.
So a lot of the girls competing against her are going to be in that 5'3 to 5'5 range, aren't they?
Yeah.
That'll be cool.
Same kind of thing with her proportions. You know, it's hard. Like, she's got fantastic shoulders and back, which is what a lot of the girls often lack at the lower levels. Mm. At the upper levels, they've all got it. You know, those long limbs, you know, arms and so on. Her legs sort of come in pretty well. She's been hammering her glutes to try and build those up because they've been historically been a little bit weak. So it's just sort of trying to, like everybody, trying to proportion those things out, but quite difficult when you're, you know, putting it over that sort of frame. I don't know if I should speak about a woman's weight, but she's up to about 80. She just touched 85 kilos on the scales at one point.
Wow.
But,
cool.
About 81, 82 now. So wanted to bring her in around, you know, sort of 70 to 72. So sort of trimming back down to that sort of just over 80 sort of means that that's more in sort of touching distance. But when she won the universe, she was sort of 69 or so. It was pre-kids and things. I think her waist probably a touch wider now than it was. So we'll kind of see how she comes in. But I'd love to get her back to that sort of level. And so I'm aiming for sort of 70 to 72 kilos. And then I guess judge condition as we kind of get there, because we can get her sort of really peeled, but that's not the look for figure. So we'll kind of judge that when we get a bit closer to the
I'm kind of excited, but I'm also thinking, two people dieting in the same house.
Well, like I said, when we're talking to Ash, yeah. I mean, the different dynamic with us, we've got kids to look after too, but it's
say, Mike, is that garage of yours, you could easily get a bed in there if you need to, bro.
I'm currently the podcasting studio is the spare room and it's got a bed in it. It's a little bit cold for her to come down here, so
you're safe.
I won't make it either.
You're safe late at night when things get scratchy. No, that's cool. It's cool. Look, guys, we are going to wrap it up because most of us have got to prep for the week. Big week ahead of school, both teaching for Mike and actually learning some stuff, hopefully, Rocco.
Try to.
Yeah, we all try to. So everyone out there, look, have a great week, and we will catch up with you later down the track. Take care.
Yes, folks.